Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, medical marijuana, it's the law of the land in Florida, and hundreds of thousands of patients across the state are taking advantage of it. Did you know about one out of every 70 Florida residents has the ability to buy cannabis to cure what ails them? They use a medical marijuana card, and they buy products like tinctures, creams, and flower.
Flower. Now, that is the most popular delivery method. Almost half of Floridians who are certified to get medical marijuana use medical marijuana through smoking it. It's been less than 4 years now, Melissa, since Florida voters okayed medical marijuana. The plant could wind up on the ballot again very soon. There are three separate efforts hoping to ask voters to okay recreational pot use.
That's right. Now, the one backed by the medical marijuana industry already has enough signatures to be reviewed by the state Supreme Court. A separate petition effort already hit the milestone back in July. Keep in mind, any petition drive to legalize marijuana has until February to collect the more than 766,000 signatures that are now required to make it onto the fall 2020 ballot. All three of the measures that are out there, here's what they do. They'd make it legal for anyone in Florida to have and use marijuana recreationally, as long as you're 21 years old. There's one big caveat, though. The industry-backed petition drive would not allow all of you Floridians out there to grow your own. So we're going to begin the hour here on the Florida Roundup with a closer look at the push to legalize in the state. Where do you stand? Give us a call. It's 305-995-1800. Already getting lots of your tweets. Send those to @FloridaRoundup. As we welcome Nick Hansen, chairman of Make It Legal Florida, joining us from WUSF, and John Kennedy. He's state capitol reporter with Gatehouse Media. John, we'll go to you in just a few moments. But first, Nick Hansen, let's talk about your effort, Make It Legal Florida. You are getting closer to the required number of petition signatures. However, your group does not want to let people grow their own cannabis. You differ from the other petition effort in that way. You have major dispensary backing. They're funding your effort. Is it fair to say let's legalize marijuana but not allow a provision for people to cultivate it themselves?
Well, first, thanks for having me. I would say that's an inaccurate statement. We're really silent on the issue of home cultivation. And one of the things we looked at when we crafted this amendment is really two standards. And the first standard is, can it pass Supreme Court review? And there's a very high bar in Florida, unlike other states where you can write very lengthy, long amendments. In Florida, you're really sort of hamstrung by a 75-word summary that has to be clear and concise and, most importantly, single subject. And so when you're tackling these large issues, you need to make sure that you can write a narrow amendment that the Supreme Court will rule is both clear to the voter and constitutionally single subject. I mean, the second standard is, can it reach 60% threshold by the voters? And that's a high bar. Many states are 50% plus one, but here in Florida, we have a 60% threshold. So when we looked at crafting our amendment, we looked at a lot of things, including home cultivation. And we felt that, one, the Supreme Court could make a reasonable argument that while we are talking about ways of dispensing, an entire home cultivation would require an entirely different new legislative scheme. It would require a lot of legislative intent. We had issues when we had the medical marijuana bill that was passed, the implementing bill by the legislature. There's still fights going on about that, including just recently that we solved the smokable issue. And then we look at the 60% of voters, right? And so we had to play this backwards and say, in a campaign when we're going to be on the ballot, what are ways that folks could scare people into not supporting expanded access for cannabis? In every state is different. And in Florida, I think voters overwhelmingly supported the medical cannabis amendment in 2016. And they have been, especially in the last year or so, very pleased with the way the rollout of medical cannabis and the dispensaries have opened up with almost 200 dispensaries statewide.
Nick, you mentioned that your proposed amendment is silent on private cultivation. Does that mean that you would support private cultivation if recreational marijuana is legalized in Florida?
Well, I can tell you that we wouldn't oppose it. If the legislature tomorrow wanted to have the ability to pass a law that allowed for home cultivation that they saw fit, that would not be something that we would oppose. I think it's something that
unlimited
a lot of
folks, cultivation, unlimited number of plants?
I think you could see folks in the industry make a stand that would say, when you're talking about well-regulated, safe access to cannabis, we feel very strongly that that needs to be third-party tested, that those folks that are buying this is a medical grade, or in this case, it is a drug that you are ingesting into the body, and so that we feel that the dispensary has the ability to be regulated by the Department of Health.
And what would you say,
tested
though,
by our own
what
labs.
Would you say, though, to critics of your intent? You are being funded by the major dispensaries, and those that would like to see this market opened up beyond those few players, including to home growers, say that you've crafted this amendment so narrowly that a small group of people will continue to reap the profits and control the industry, which is a growing industry.
Sure. So we go back to what was the original framework of the 2016 amendment that set these medical marijuana treatment centers and the licensing regulations that we have today as implemented by the legislature, and really built off of that. And that was really, as I go back to the two standards, we really wanted to have an ironclad way to defend this in front of the Supreme Court. I think it's no secret that the Supreme Court has gotten more conservative, mm-hmm. And has, mm-hmm. you know, and when given the opportunity, especially on issues, they are, at the end of the day, they are jurists who will make, we hope, the most clearly constitutional rulings possible. But we understand this is not an issue that is supported by, conservatives as a whole. And so we needed to make sure that they could punch no holes in the constitutionality of our amendment. And that's really why we based it off of the 2016 amendment itself.
Nick, do you think the proposed amendment that you have with your group reinforces the vertical integration of marijuana cannabis cultivation in Florida? That's an integration, as you know, that some Republican lawmakers have expressed interest in breaking apart.
No, I don't think it does. In fact, it's something we looked at. One of the things we and I'll kind of pull the curtain back for you a little bit as we were crafting this language. One of the things we wanted to add in there, or at least I said, was allowing the legislature to license outside of the existing vertical integration. That was then brought to my attention by our attorneys that would probably open us up to a single subject violation. But again, if tomorrow the legislature decided, and I know there are several bills out there to go to what's called a horizontal licensure system. If tomorrow we did that, this amendment does not lock in vertical integration, and it does not make it horizontal. It simply says if you are licensed MMTC, Medical Marijuana Treatment Center, whether you are vertical or horizontal, however the legislature decides, you would have the dispensing authority for 21 and over for both medical and for adult use.
It's 305-995-1800. Call us up here on the Florida Roundup as we talk about the drive to legalize marijuana in Florida for recreational use. There are competing petition drives floating out there right now, as we're hearing from Nick Hansen, chairman of Make It Legal Florida. Let's bring in John Kennedy. He's state capitol reporter with Gatehouse Media on the line from Tallahassee. And John, as you've been reporting, the state legislature is watching all this activity with kind of a wary eye, as you've said. Why is that?
Well, I think there are plenty of opponents or people that certainly have their doubts about Florida taking this next step to recreational or adult use marijuana. It's mostly the Florida House that has been bringing in some out-of-state experts, basically, to testify about some of the experiences in some of the states that have had legalized marijuana for a few years now, anyway. And some of the stories that they're telling are, broadly kind of horror stories of their states at times, where you have, there was a law enforcement professional from Oregon talking about how that state has had an overproduction of marijuana, that it's fueling a black market in neighboring states, that there was another person that testified, a Harvard professor who has studied extensively the use of marijuana, and talked about how the production and the use of marijuana, that whatever tax revenue the states are taking in, that the sort of the social cost and the actual cost as well, when it comes to increased emergency room visits and medical care, mental health issues, that a lot of the cost of legalized marijuana is exceeding what the states are taking in. So obviously, you know, these were people with agendas, with viewpoints on this issue, but the Florida House is giving them a platform to air these opinions. And, you know, it looks like the makings of an opposition campaign is what I would take away
John,
from it.
Marijuana has moved into, you know, the medical arena legally in Florida, not because of an action that the legislature has taken. It has allowed medical marijuana to be smoked. Again, not because of an action that the legislature has taken, but almost agreed upon inaction that the governor took, deciding not to appeal a case that the state lost trying to keep smokable marijuana off the market. So it's the state government here has been reactive to the voter effort here. And that sets this stage, doesn't it, in 2020 for the possibility of this recreational question to appear on a ballot?
Oh, it sure does. Yeah. If the Florida Supreme Court says that there's no problem, you know, with the constitutionality of these amendments that are advancing, and the amendments do indeed successfully get the 766,200 verified signatures that they need, they will be ready for the ballot. And I think they are funded enough to get there. So, well, but I think there will be opposition as well.
Now, keep in mind, a recent University of North Florida poll found wide majorities of Floridians, both Democrats and Republicans and independents, overwhelmingly support the legalization of marijuana here in the Sunshine State. So where do you stand, Florida? What do you think about this? Give us a call. It's 305-995-1800. Luke is in Tampa. Hi, Luke. How are you? Go ahead.
I'm wonderful. Thank you for the privilege.
Sure, go ahead.
I have a little bit of experience. I was the counsel involved in a couple of different cases, one involving the gentleman who asserted the right to grow his own so that he could consume medical marijuana in the fashion deemed most optimal to him as a cancer survivor. And we prevailed in the lower court. Unfortunately, on appeal, they reversed that decision, even though Amendment 2 says that a qualified patient can possess a growing plant. The appellate court monkeyed around a little bit with the definition, said, well, we don't know how to keep it safe. How would we ever do that? So that is actually the subject of a petition to the Florida Supreme Court. But on the other hand, we also participated in the case where we got an injunction against the Department of Health not processing applications. Since 2017, the Department of Health has been supposed to provide processes so people can file an application. There's not one medical marijuana treatment center operating in Florida that ever went through a proper application process because they've never adopted the procedures. And I think in our case, we have over 50 intervening entities to challenge the vertical integration, which the court found was unconstitutional because that's not what the amendment says. And what's troubling to the people in my camp are the fact that the folks that did get these licenses, either through settlements or legislative fiat, one of those sold for over $53 million, and it was the person that never planted one seed, never served one patient. So there's a big money variable to this that's very troubling. And
do you see it as a monopoly?
I see it as nothing other than a monopoly. And and just to look at the way the licensed facilities opposed our effort and donated to people in the House to intervene in our case to oppose our effort, it really took on a completely different dimension. I would note that when Amendment 2 passed in Florida by over 71%, there had never been anything in any other state in the country that embraced any issue involving marijuana by a greater percentage. And I would anticipate that should the Supreme Court approve this short description, and I concur with the Speaker that it is tough to get them to approve the way that a legislative act or a constitutional amendment is defined and described. But once that's done, I think that the citizens of the state of Florida will overwhelmingly approve this. And my concern is that, like what we've been dealing with for the past 3 years, the legislature will monkey around with this and prevent access to, certainly in this instance, with an important medical substance than in the other context, a recreational substance that's been around for thousands of years.
And I appreciate that. That's Luke. He's Luke LaRoe on the line. He represented a patient in the state named Joe Redner who wanted the right to grow his own medical marijuana. Let's put this to both of our guests, beginning with you, Nick Hansen, chairman of Make It Legal Florida. Cynics watching your petition effort, it looks great. You're pushing for legalization, but they see it, I think, as a backdoor way to preserve what they're criticizing as a monopoly on the small number of growers and purveyors of cannabis in Florida. How do you respond to that accusation?
Well, first I'd respond that every licensed operator in the state of Florida is only playing by the rules as set forth by the legislature. And I think the caller accurately pointed out that the legislature, this is not a secret, has thrown up many roadblocks for both patients, access for patients, as well as license holders themselves. The rules have changed multiple times since the 2016 Amendment 2. And so I think, yes, we have to continue to fight that fight. So, but again, our amendment made clear, and I know that initially when the amendment was released, folks did not read the print as fine because a lot of folks thought it sort of locked in vertical integration. It absolutely does not.
There's another one that there's another amendment though that specifically says people would be allowed to cultivate their own. So people could theoretically be very confused by these two competing amendments.
Well, they could be, but they're separate amendments. And, you know, the amendment I think you're referring to, Regulate Florida, as it's a shorthand sort of note, I think it's Sensible Florida's actual political committee name that's been collecting for about 2 years. It has a very different track that they take for expanded access. I view this candidly as a movement. And I say this every time I'm in front of folks or people ask. I don't view this amendment as the last stop on expanding access and the movement for cannabis for adults.
John Kennedy, though, the legislature has shown an ability to kind of take the lack of language in voter approved amendments as an opening for them to pass legislation that implements the amendment. We've seen that with the Amendment 4, Restoration of Rights. We saw it with the Medical Marijuana Amendment in 2016. So the lack of addressing personal cultivation is that kind of a liability, essentially, in this kind of potential referendum.
Yeah, the legislature can foot drag on this forever and ever. And, you know, whatever might pass from voters next year, if it does get to that, is something, too, that I can fully imagine the legislature slowing this down. You know, you also have, you know, Governor DeSantis has talked about trying to get rid of the vertical integration system. Mm-hmm. If the legislature starts trying to readdress that as well, that would be a complicator. And then, you know, in the back of all this, you still have opposition to, you know, any kind of medical marijuana legislation or legalization, I should say, whether it be medical or recreational, you know, coming from some big Republican donors through the years. You know, Sheldon Adelson, who is a Las Vegas casino owner and big DeSantis supporter, he helped fund the opposition effort to medical marijuana a few years ago in Florida.
Yeah.
So you still have that, you know, political cloud over it as well.
John, Nick, hold on. We got a lot of phone calls we're going to get to. We're going to take a short break talking about the push to put to voters in 2020 recreational marijuana in Florida. John Kennedy is a state capitol reporter at Gatehouse Media with us from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU. Nick Hansen is the chairman of Make It Legal Florida with us in Tampa from WUSF. 305-995-1800. Are you a medical marijuana card carrier in Florida? 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup. More still to come.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. And as we continue talking about the push to legalize marijuana in Florida, you know, Tom, the tweets coming in overwhelmingly are on the legalized side. Let me just read a few of them here. Here's one from Dan. I 100% support this. It is stupid that it's illegal, and it's even more stupid that people are in jail over it. Legalize, regulate, tax, and wipe records. You know, referring to all the people who are incarcerated because they were in possession of small amounts of marijuana in the past. That's another issue that people are weighing in on right now.
Yeah, lots of folks here. We're talking with John Kennedy, state capitol reporter with Gatehouse Media, and Nick Hansen is chairman of Make It Legal Florida, one of the three efforts to put a recreational marijuana referenda question to Florida voters in the fall of 2020. 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800 in Boca Raton. Fred on line six. Go ahead, Fred. You're on the radio.
Hi. I love your program. Thank you. I just want to share a couple of things. My wife and I are in our 60s. My wife has MS. She's had it for over 20 years. I've had my bouts with cancer, including prostate cancer and other cancers. And we have problems sleeping. So we've been obtaining our cannabis through a dealer who delivers it to our home because my wife can't walk, so she can't leave home. I also feel that that we're losing out as Florida on taxes. And it's very difficult to even get the legal medical because you've got to pay a doctor for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to pay quite a bit more. So it pays to use it illegally at this point. And I think that the legislation in Florida is ridiculous to try and ban the legalization of it. As far as recreational, I think, as you said, over 21 is fine, and that should be monitored. But as far as banning recreational use of cannabis, it's really a dumb thing. Because
it sounds like you're a supporter for recreational use, but you're a medical user, self-prescribed, and getting it on the black market, Fred. Is that right? You're not a card-carrying medical marijuana patient?
No, and I would say that 80% of our friends who are in their 50s and 60s are doing the same thing.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Fred, thanks for sharing your story with us. Yeah, John Kennedy, some recent statistics that came out were very fascinating. I mean, the number of Floridians who are going to the doctor and paying that fee, the doctor's fee for the examination, plus the $75 fee for the medical marijuana card, continues to expand each and every month, and tens of thousands of new patients are moving into the market for smokable flower.
Yeah, though I think there are many people like our caller who find it still an obstacle, you know, when it comes to going through the process of the dispensary and, you know, getting marijuana from one of the 22 licensed dealers that there are in the state. It's a complicated world. You know, 11 states and the District of Columbia have legalized small amounts of marijuana for adult use, but under federal law, you know, any use of marijuana is still illegal. So, how do you square that, you know? And banks are still reluctant to take any mm-hmm. money. It's kind of a cash business.
Mm-hmm.
And dispensaries have to devise workarounds, don't they, John, because of that? Because they can't have a normal relationship with a bank like most other businesses.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick is probably a better speaker on some of that, how some of the actual vendors,
how they
handle
do
their
it.
Cash.
Yeah. Nick, what about that? And,
sure,
and we're
yeah.
getting tweets asking, how will this all be regulated as well?
Great. Two great questions. One, it's a little bit of a misconception that dispensaries are cash only. We are not. Most dispensaries are cash or debit. They don't have credit. The banking rules have loosened somewhat, but what it really amounts to is you are forced to use community banks, local regional banks, that have a higher threshold for reporting because of cannabis. I think it's inaccurate to say that it's not bankable, because we are. Most dispensaries have, you know, relationships with multiple banks in order to process. But it does create, I think John is right, there are workarounds, and there are still workarounds that some smaller dispensaries have to deal with. And every state is different. And so you're requiring a threshold. This is not something where if you were a multi-state operator or a national cannabis retailer like my employer, you can't have a relationship with Bank of America. But you might set up three or four different relationships with smaller banks. So that's sort of one. I think the second question was about how would this be regulated in an adult use world. And I'm going to speak specifically to our amendment. Our amendment keeps the regulatory authority under the Department of Health, and we did that one because they now have a track record that they of understanding how to test and how to look at these at cannabis and understand it. We didn't want to start all from a whole new cloth, setting up an entirely new agency, but we also wanted to give the people of Florida the comfort, because I think there comes a high comfort level with looking at Department of Health as the stamp of approval, that what you are putting into your body, whether medicinally or as a wellness product, is safe and regulated properly. And so we felt that it was important to keep that in the lane of the Department of Health.
Mm-hmm. More calls here. Boyce in Miami has been patient on line one. Go ahead, Boyce. You're on the radio.
Hi. I'm a psychiatrist practicing in Miami, Florida, and I have a number of patients who've come into the medical ED from time to time complaining of psychotic symptoms, delusions and hallucinations precipitated by cannabis use. And I find that the general public is not generally aware of the fact that there is a population of people who are susceptible to developing psychotic symptoms, even after perhaps a year of on-off cannabis use. And I just think that would probably change the conversation somewhat if people knew that there were certain risks involved in cannabis use, particularly for patients who are susceptible to psychosis or have a family history of schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. But that's basically all I wanted to say.
Okay, Boyce, we get it. How about it, Nick? Should there perhaps be on recreational marijuana, if you're successful, some warning signs on it?
We do that now. We have packaging. It depends on the state. I'm sure the legislature will step in. We know that in a regulated market, I think some of the things we need to sort of bifurcate here is on the illicit market. We've seen this in the vaping issue, right? There are people who are causing deaths and things from vapes, both e-cigarettes or linked to cannabis vaping. But what they have found is that they're overwhelmingly from the illicit market. When they've tested products that have come from a regulated market, they don't have all of these other they're not laced with anything. They are pure either cannabis-derived oil or flower and not filled with pesticides and all these other things. So, yes, and it's absolutely important in the industry to make sure that your packaging is labeled, that you understand the effects and that you understand what you are actually putting in. And so that's why we constantly say this is why you have to have it regulated. When you don't, you know you're going to push people into the illicit market where they are buying from dealers off the street who are putting all sorts of incredibly harmful and deadly additives into the product that they are selling people. And while it may be cheaper by a few dollars here and there, you're playing a very dangerous game with your life, because drug dealers don't have a third party testing. They don't have shareholders. They don't have anybody looking over their shoulder to make sure that they are on the up and up. They are there to make a quick dollar and do not care about the end use of anybody who's using their products. So it's another testament as to why we need to have regulation and why we need to make sure that it is clear and concise and labeled correctly. I 100% agree with that.
All right, let's go to some more calls. Where do you stand on the full legalization of marijuana in Florida? Melissa is in Tallahassee. Hey, Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry about that. Melissa VR here with Normal Tallahassee, and I'm also a volunteer and regional coordinator for Sensible Florida, for the petition to regulate marijuana like alcohol. And we have been, we're a grassroots organization throughout Florida with the Normal chapters and through Regulate Florida groups all through the state as well. And one thing is that since we've been, grassroots outreach since 2015, 2016, really to change the tide, because we understand that, we needed 60%, 60% support for a petition. Even though medical did pass back in 2015, 2016, it was still under 60% support for full legalization. And really through education, information, proper education, we have really been able to change the tide and really educate people on the use of cannabis and on the use of having a tested product and just clean product. One of the things that I really want to point out is that the First District Court of Appeal August 2019, they put out a brief that said out of 42% of the medical marijuana treatment centers, they are only producing 6% of the medical marijuana in the state. So they are just using these licenses to buy and sell and not actually help the population, help the patient population. And what I have seen all of my research, as of January 2019, the patient population has degraded by 25%. And up to August of 2019, it's dropped by 35%. And that's generally due to cost. Patients cannot afford to be in the medical marijuana market. So they, you know, the fees are so exorbitant. We have some of the highest fees for the ID cards in the state. And what's really important also about the difference between, you know, our petition to regulate marijuana like alcohol is the fact that we allow for home grow, that we also allow for, we want our artisans to have, you know, many of my members are growers or cultivators. And so we don't want to be blocked out of a market because of a high entrance fee. The entrance fee to become a medical marijuana treatment center in Florida is over $60,000 just for the application fee. That's not including all the infrastructure required that's statutorily required. So we're talking about a difference in fees. When DBPR, Department of Business and Professional Regulation, they gave a presentation to the Office of Economic and Demographic Research showing that $4,000 is one of the highest fees for alcohol licensing in Florida. So we want to make sure that our artisans we want to get people out of the underground market, and we really feel as if the petition to make it legal is going to just the underground market explode, because then people are going to be cut out of the the industry because of the high entrance fees.
Something
really important is that when I'm talking,
and
to
Melissa, we're getting up to a break. So you clearly know quite a bit about this. We should have booked you as a guest. Maybe next time. That's Melissa on the line from Tallahassee, an activist on the legalization drive in Florida. We'll continue to cover this on the Florida Roundup. Sorry to cut you off there, Melissa, but we do need to shift gears here. And we thank Nick Hansen, chairman of Make It Legal Florida, and John Kennedy. He covers the state capitol for Gatehouse Media. Lots of tweets coming into the show, too. As I said, most of you out there are supporting legalization. Thanks for everyone who contributed to this discussion. A quick break here. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
This week, Robert Luck was confirmed as a new judge on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. This is the federal court district that includes Florida. Now, Luck got a promotion after just 10 months sitting on the Florida Supreme Court. He was one of the three judges named to the state's top court by Governor Ron DeSantis right after DeSantis took office back in January. And a second of the governor's picks for that high court is likely to leave soon, too. Justice Barbara Lagoa has also been nominated for an open seat at the U.S. Court of Appeals. The vacancies will give the governor historic timing to place justices on the state's highest court, and he's moving to make that court pretty conservative.
I will have made 5 appointments in 13 months. And to put that in perspective, 2 of my predecessors, Jeb Bush and Rick Scott, served a combined 16 years, and they made a combined 3 appointments in 16 years. So sometimes these things just happen.
And at the federal level, let's point out as well, President Trump will have 5 appointees on the appeals court. That includes Florida. So as both the governor and the president move to reshape the judiciary in a more conservative way, how will those judges' decisions affect what goes on here in Florida? Give us a call at 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup as we welcome Carl Tobias, professor at the University of Richmond Law School, and Gray Rohr. He is a state government reporter with the Orlando Sentinel. Carl Tobias, let's begin with you. You know, Governor DeSantis has moved aggressively on the judiciary, and he's taken some criticism for some of his appointments, in particular, ignoring recommendations from the Florida bar. What are your thoughts about DeSantis' moves with appointing judges, and how significant are they?
There have been very few appointments that governors have had recently. And so anytime you have the opportunity to appoint that many judges, it can make a big difference on an important court like that. And so with the elevation of Luck and Lagoa to the 11th Circuit, this opens up another opportunity for him. And so that's important. If he is, in fact, ignoring the bar, that's unfortunate, because they probably have some valuable input. So that's what I see from my perspective.
Professor, how important is the bar in the overall nominating process? There's a judicial review group in Florida, for instance, and, of course, the Federalist Society that President Trump has been kind of picking some of his federal nominees from.
Well, I'm more familiar with the federal system. In the federal system, I think that the senators, Scott and Rubio, have a commission. And when Nelson was a senator, he worked with Rubio closely on that commission. And they were able to reduce the number of district vacancies from double figures to three now. And that's valuable to Florida. And many of those Trump appointees were well qualified. A number of them were minority nominees. And I think all of them have been confirmed and are now serving on the district courts, mostly in the Southern District, but also middle, and some, I think, one or two on Northern. And so that's been valuable. And then, of course, the two people who were confirmed this week for the 11th Circuit are critically important.
Yeah, creating new openings again for Governor DeSantis to appoint two new folks to the Florida Supreme Court. We're talking about the judiciary in the Southeast with the 11th Circuit Court. We'll talk about how significant that court is to Florida, as well as the governor's picks for the Supreme Court of Florida, and kind of what's in the litigation pipeline. What are some of the issues that the justices are going to sit in and make decisions on? 305-995-1800. The Florida Roundup, more to come. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As Governor Ron DeSantis moves aggressively to appoint conservative justices to the bench here in Florida, we're taking a closer look at what that means for the state. Let's bring in Gray Rohr. He's a reporter covering state government for the Orlando Sentinel. Gray, thanks for being with us. And these appointments, sometimes when judges get appointed, it can take years to see the impact, but what are some of the biggest issues that could affect the state in light of some of the more conservative appointments DeSantis is making?
Well, I think one of them is obviously what you guys were just discussing, whether or not the recreational marijuana ballot initiative will get on there. There's a slew of other ballot initiatives that the Supreme Court must review, even if they get the signatures before it can go before for voters. One that's coming up fairly soon, I think there's oral arguments in early December for a minimum wage ballot measure to increase the minimum wage to $15 by 2026. So that's one that'll come fairly soon. That I guess the justices that just moved on to the federal appeals court will miss out on. But that's one that's coming up soon. Another that will come up relatively soon in a couple of years is redistricting. That's an inherently political battle, and it's inevitably in recent years become a legal battle, no matter how they draw the maps. Especially coming off of the last time around when we had the Fair Districts ballot measure that was passed, essentially an anti-gerrymandering one. So that'll be a key one to look out for in a couple of years' time when they redraw some congressional and legislative
maps. This is proof that elections have consequences. People don't stop to think about this very often. if you don't like some of these judges, then you should have voted, or vice versa. Maybe you chose Ron DeSantis because you knew he'd nominate very conservative candidates for judgeships at every level, Tom. He is moving aggressively to completely remake this state's judiciary.
Yeah, and Carl Tobias with the University of Richmond Law School, not unlike what the president has done in the federal judiciary in terms of filling as fast as possible those judicial openings, right?
Absolutely. Again, five people confirmed for the 11th Circuit and flipping that circuit from democratically appointed judges to Republican appointed judges.
What's the significance of that? What's the significance of that flipping, as you call it, for the 11th Circuit?
Well, it's a crude measure, but an important measure, because it means that on three judge panels you might draw two whom a Republican president had appointed and one whom a Democratic president had appointed. And for the en banc decision, the full court reviewing matters, you would get a different majority if you looked at the appointing president. And those make a huge difference over time. And so that is important. It's a measure that the White House is using, and many other evaluators use as well.
Does it change the types of cases then that are going to be looking for perhaps a more friendly appeals circuit to enter?
Well, to some extent, there may be that kind of forum shopping. But in the long run, when you replace people in their 60s or 70s with people who are in their 40s or 50s, that makes a substantial difference, and that's what's happening. But the greatest measure nationally is there, out of 179 appeals court vacancies, there's only one vacancy today. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been that low since before President Bush was in office.
Gray Rohr, let's point out that Ron DeSantis is a Harvard-trained lawyer himself. He's what you'd call an originalist. He saw the former progressive Supreme Court majority in Florida as being a constant frustration, a thorn in the side of Republicans' legislative agenda. He has moved to change that. Some of the issues now pending before that court, everything, as you said, from Florida's Stand Your Ground law, the death penalty, access to abortion. Let's talk about that, the abortion issue, and how the DeSantis appointments could affect access to abortion in Florida over time. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, that is a big one. And we'll see if the legislature ends up passing a bill this year, next year, to require parental consent for minors seeking an abortion. It's a bill that it's a law that was actually struck down by the Florida Supreme Court back in the late 80s. Now with the conservative court there, poised to try again if they end up passing. That's a law that would definitely almost certainly end up before the Florida Supreme Court if they pass it, and a ruling, if they knock down that previous precedent, that could have a ripple effect on, maybe future abortion restrictions, because, that prior ruling really relied on a provision of the Florida state constitution that is a pretty pervasive, expansive privacy rights that the previous ruling was held on. So if they strike that down, that's, could open the floodgates for more state-level abortion restrictions.
In Fort Pierce, Francis is online, too, wants to talk about the courts here in Florida. Go ahead, Francis. You're on the radio.
Yes, hi. This is truly the era of the robber baron, and I'm worried because of all these judicial appointments, now federally, with Mitch McConnell and Trump and DeSantis here statewide, we are now really moving towards anti-worker, anti-freedom, and anti-voter rights agendas. And I'm 59, and I was hoping we wouldn't go backwards. So that's my comment.
Francis, thank you for sharing that perspective. Professor Tobias, I'm wondering, how do you respond when you hear, obviously, the concern that Francis in Fort Pierce has?
She sounded near tears.
For her worldview. Yeah, yeah, for her worldview and her concern that that's not being reflected in the judiciary.
Well, those are serious concerns. They should be taken seriously. And the way to address that is to vote in November.
That's and the Gray, thing. I just wanted to point this out again. Voter turnout is so appallingly low most of the time, especially in off-year elections, because people don't always stop and think about the fact that elections have consequences. And the judiciary has more power over our lives often than people ever stop to think about. So when you choose your candidate, know that they will appoint judges that may or may not comport with your worldview. It's really, you know, one of the most important reasons you should go out and vote.
Gray, just a couple of minutes left here, but I'm wondering how the remaking of the Supreme Court and some of the circuit courts in the state could affect the types of bills that the Republican legislature is going to be moving as they look ahead to this this conservative judiciary in the state in the years ahead.
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the groups that was really excited about this new turnover, at least at the Florida Supreme Court level, is all the big business groups, the Florida Chamber, Associated Industries of Florida. They have been thwarted sort of time and time again on different things that the Republican legislature has passed in the past regarding workers' compensation, capping attorneys' fees, medical malpractice, tort reforms in general, making it harder to sue on different things for some of these companies. And so anything related to that you know, they have to get it through the legislature now, which
sure.
is no mean trick. But I think those are that's another big piece of this, where they were constantly running up against the Florida Supreme Court.
Yeah, we saw that with education, for instance, under Governor Bush, and we've seen it under a number of items, of course, under Governor Rick Scott as well. But Governor DeSantis, kind of historic timing on his part with at least appointments to the Florida Supreme Court.
Election. Governors don't often get the chance to do this many appointments in this tight time frame. It's pretty significant.
Gray Rohrer, thanks for sharing your perspective. The Orlando Sentinel state government reporter with us from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU. And Professor Carl Tobias, professor at the University of Richmond Law School in Richmond, Virginia. To each of you, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, before we wrap things up today, a quick update to a story we first touched on a couple of weeks ago. Remember this? The Citrus County Board of Commissioners, they voted 3-2 this week to reject their county's public library system's request for an online subscription to the New York Times. This became a huge national flap. They got negative national attention after one commissioner echoed the president and called the New York Times fake news when they were voting on the idea about a month ago, Tom.
Yeah, they said they'd bring that back for another vote. And in fact, that's what happened this week in Citrus County. It was not only front page news in the Bay Area and Florida, it was across the country. And commissioners faced a firestorm of backlash as well as support. Some folks accusing them of censorship, others supporting them in that fake news accusation. During this week's meeting, Commissioner Ron Kitchen criticized that media coverage, taking direct aim at the local paper, the Citrus County Chronicle, accusing the staff of throwing the county under the bus.
You're not going to hear about the good things that happen in Citrus County. You're going to hear we're a laughing stock because, oh my, we actually said it aloud that we supported the President of the United States.
Well, commissioners in Citrus County this week also talked about maybe coming back and taking another look at this issue at some future date, unannounced so far, to talk about a more formal policy for what newspapers the county library would offer to citizens.
One thing we can tell you for sure, this show is not fake news. Thanks for listening to the Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Denise Royal and Heather Schatz are producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our technical director this hour. The Director of Radio Operations at WLRN is Peter Meritz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos. More at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday. Have a great weekend.